keeping you up to date with everything Rugby League. This is the Final Hooter on Radio General.
Hi there, my name's Dave Parkinson, and you're listening to the Final Hooter podcast. And in this edition, I'm speaking with Sean Briscoe, all about his career. Nice to meet you, Sean.
Afternoon, Dave, hope you're well.
Very well, and so what about yourself?
Yeah, I'm really good, thanks.
What created your building blocks then?
It's a tricky one to answer because I think there's a lot of different things that went into why I ended up playing or why I played rugby and what type of player I was. Obviously, my dad played semi-professional over at Chorley and Blackpool Borough and Springfield Borough, so naturally I went into the game. Well, not naturally, but I was there every weekend. Rugby was my life. I was mascot every other weekend, and obviously you know yourself, over at Chorley there's one man and his dog watching, and me as a ball boy collecting the post pads in at the end of the game, and that was probably all that attended. So that was a massive learning curve for me, that actually sitting watching a game of rugby so close, it sounds daft, but kind of seeing how things worked, what happened as a result of things like that, and I kind of learned to understand what rugby was about and what needed to be done. And I always remember Chorley weren't the most successful team, and they were losing by 2 points going into a game, and a player got the ball on his way to the try line, and all he had to do was put the ball down, and he tried a big fancy dive, dropped the ball over the line. And obviously, like I said, Chorley didn't win many games. They'd have won this game. That was the last few seconds. They'd have won this game. And I remember looking at him thinking, why have you done that? Why don't you just score and then show off? So that's something, or do whatever you wanted to do after that. It's a little things like that always stuck in my head, of like the way to play the game and learning. So I joined Hindley Giants when I was 7-8 year old, and I played there for a few years, and then when I was 11 I went across to Wigan St Patrick's, played over there for 5 years, and then went on to Wigan. But during that 5 years I was quite fortunate to play in a pretty decent team, and I think the competition for players, and we lost one game in 5 years,
right,
and that was against Lee East. We just talked about Lee East, 17-16 in a cup semi-final, and that element of competitiveness to keep that winning run going and not to get beaten, and that, yeah, obviously it does come down to the players you've got in your team, but I think that kind of brought a lot of it out in a lot of us, that the winning mentality. And I know there's a lot spoke about now of the winning mentality of, is it winning all, is it winning or is it taking part? But it's what you class as winning. So for one child, winning might be getting 2 out of 10 on his spelling test one week, and the week after he goes home and he works hard and he gets 4 out of 10 the next week. That's winning. It's not getting the big trophy, the 2 points or a big pat on the back. It's you working hard and achieving what you want to try and achieve. So for me, learning to win and that desire to win is something that stuck by me. And people who know me will tell you that I'm probably the most competitive person. I hate losing. I absolutely can't stand losing. But it's got to be the right way. So it's not a case of it's somebody else's fault if I lose. It's right, how do I get better so that I can win? So it's not a go home and kick the cat type of thing. It's right, what did I do well? What did I do wrong? And that could be playing a game with the kids. I don't let my little lad win. You should see the sulk on his face.
Hey, to be fair though, I mean, that I think winning and losing, it's part of life, isn't it? You know, so if you're also learning in that, or you can turn a losing experience into a winning experience, then that's what it's all about as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's overcoming them obstacles. Like you'll get some people who fail at something, they'll never go back and do it again. Well, why not? Why? Who's to say that you're not the best person? And there's a great video on YouTube called The Gold Mine Effect. If you get a chance to watch, it's about 10 minutes long, but it's a fantastic video, and it talks about talent identification and what is talent and how do you recognise talent. And it talks about the fact that Richard Branson's dyslexic and nobody noticed it, and Paul McCartney went through high school and nobody realised that he was a musical genius, and Michael Jordan was cut from his basketball team. And it's how you deal with adversity and things like that. So I think as a youngster, I kind of dealt with it quite well. The St Pat's team that I played in had Sean O'Loughlin as captain, obviously the current Wigan and England captain. He was part of it, and there was 14 of us from the side who went on to sign for professional clubs.
All from the same team?
All from the same team, yeah.
Blimey, so that's got to be some sort of record, that.
I don't know. I don't know if they're right there. But we were very successful. A lot went to Wigan. One to Widnes. A couple to Warrington and a couple to Saints. So it was the backbone of it. But the first one was Sean. Sean O'Loughlin was the first one to sign. I was the last one. I was the 14th. And I spoke to one of the scouts who offered me the contract, and he said, "I'll be honest, we took a chance on you. We weren't sure, but we took a chance on. We saw something and we liked it, and we took a chance." And for me, it kind of summed up the way I was, that I knew what I wanted. I wanted to be a Super League player. I wanted to play at the top of the game, and I weren't the most talented. I weren't the fastest, the fittest, the strongest. But I had a good attitude and I understood the game. And if you asked me to tell you any characteristic that any player needs, it's a good attitude. Mm. That's what got me through. That's what got me to where I ended up getting to in the game. Just having an attitude that I want to succeed, I will succeed, and I'll do whatever I need to. So I never really went out drinking. I'm not saying my diet was fantastic, but I kept myself to myself and I worked hard at training on what I needed to work on. It weren't if I'll do the things that I already can do, it's the things that I can't do. So I went away and worked on them. And
there's a lot of sacrifices, really, isn't there, for a professional player in that respect? Because, you know, you're talking there, and I suppose, thinking about it, half of your mates must have been out on the Saturday night and you're preparing for a game on the Sunday.
Yeah, I think there's two elements to this. If you go back to the 14 lads that signed from that team, there's myself and Sean O'Loughlin, who had probably long Super League careers. You had Dean Gaskell, who played at Warrington, Lee, who was in that team, who played a handful of games. Johnny Whittle played a few games at Widnes, played at Wigan, Wakefield. Mark Roberts had a good career within the Championship. So there's five there that did all right, and the rest of them never really carried on playing the game.
Right.
And it's strange to see, because I'd, at 16-year-old, have said the other 13 were better than me and they could go on, but I had that determination that I was going to get better, and it was about me. It wasn't about comparing myself to them. It was what I could do and what I could control. So as I progressed through it, it kind of stuck with me, and I joke about it with a coach when I do meet him, a gentleman called Chris Chapman. When I was 14, and it was the National Development Camp, 120 kids were split into four teams of 30, reds, greens, yellows and blues, and out of your 30, they selected a 13 from your side.
Right.
And I didn't make the 13 in the red side. And normally, me being me, I'd quite shy and reserved. I'd have just gone home and that was it. But I thought, this one day, I plucked up the courage to go to one of the coaches and said, "Can I ask why..." I wasn't there, the other coach, but why I didn't make the 13. And he said, for me, the only thing that he could possibly say is, you don't talk enough.
Right.
You don't actually talk enough within training. You can do it all, but you don't talk. You're not a presence within it all. So for me, from that day on, I started talking a lot more within sessions, and people will have seen me at games or heard me more than anything at games. I never shut up during a game. Obviously, it helped playing fullback, but I never shut up. And I remember Terry O'Connor saying to me, one of the first games I played at Wigan, he said, "Keep doing it." He said, "That encourages me to get you." When we do kick chase or anything like that, right, you screaming at me makes me run faster. I was thinking, I like this. It's all right. I'm telling a senior international here what to do, and he's telling me he likes it. I'm thinking, it works. But for me, like I said, that plucking up the courage that one day to ask a question was probably one of the most important days of my career.
So you get in the first team at Wigan, you work your way through the system, you beat all the odds, you're one of those few kids that gets handed the first team jumper, you do a full season and a half, and then you ended up leaving Wigan to go to Hull. What brought that move about?
What brought it about? Yeah, there's a long answer and a short answer. Probably the best way to say it is, I wanted to play rugby. I wanted to play rugby, and I wanted to play rugby at Wigan, but Chris Radlinski's not a bad player, or he weren't a bad player, let's just say. And it was going to be difficult for me to shift Chris. I sat down with Mike Gregory, who was the coach at the time, and he said, "Look," he said, "I can't guarantee you that you're going to play." At the same time, Maurice Lindsay was the chairman, I think, chairman owner, he told me that I had to leave. And it was like, well, you're telling me I have to leave, but I've still got another year on my contract, and I want to learn, and I want to play at Wigan. And there's one or two different things went on, and Wigan, well, Morris was saying, I had to leave. Mike was saying, look, you don't have to, you've got a contract, it's up to you. In that time, obviously, you start feeling unwanted, and that what's the best thing for me? I spoke with Hull FC, Widnes and Salford, about opportunities to go and play there. And then I'd worked with John Key with England Academy, England A the year before, and he convinced me that Hull was the place to go to. So I went in and spoke with Mike, said that I wanted to leave, and they informed me that Morris had changed his mind and that I weren't allowed to go anywhere. So it was kind of frustrating that I'd agreed to go to Hull on a personal note, but then Morris had turned, eventually found out that he knew that Hull had agreed terms with me and that he wanted a transfer fee.
Ah, right, okay, yeah, so that explains it all, yeah.
I spoke with Mike, and Mike went in and went into bat for me with Morris and said, look, for the sake of this kid, you need to let him leave and you need to let him do what he needs to do. I don't want to lose him, but this is it. So that came about. Yeah, I didn't really want to leave Wigan. It's my hometown, and I loved playing there, and it was something I'm really, really proud of. I'm a proud Wiganer. But moving to Hull, I played every single game. I started every single game that year. Achieved quite a few personal honours in the game as well. So I was proud of that, and kind of things just went on and on from there. And
you had a great stint at Hull, really. I mean, you've only got to look at it. You won international selection. You got to play in grand finals, you know, and that type of stuff.
Lost.
Well, I didn't want to bring that up. Yeah. I wasn't going to mention the L, you know.
The grand final ones, obviously, I played in a grand final. Yes, we got beat to Saints. There's a kid, it's local rivals in it. But the one that probably, it hurts the most is the Challenge Cup, missing the Challenge Cup final. I played every, I played in all the other rounds. We beat Saints in the semi-final at the Galfarm, or the McAlpine, John Smith, whatever it's called now, at Huddersfield, and we weren't expected to win that game. And I was picked in the team. I was going to start at full-back as usual, and then 2 days before the game, when we were travelling down to Cardiff to play the final, I weren't feeling very well. I started being sick, and it just wasn't like me, and my wife just said, stop being soft, it's the nerves. So he's like, well, I'm not going to argue with you, love. So got on the team coach, continued to be sick. They put me in isolation in my own room. The rest of the lads went out bowling. All the coach staff went out bowling. So I was stuck in this hotel on my own, feeling like absolute mess. The next morning, I rang the physio. I said, look, I need to go to the hospital. There's something not right at all. Went to the hospital, did a couple of scans, and I had appendicitis. So
really?
The day before the Challenge Cup final, all set to play. Like I said, as a Wiganer, the Challenge Cup was the one. I always remember going to the parade at Central Park, and Dennis Betts and Henry Paul dancing on the crossbar. Challenge Cup means a lot to me. And
well, it was every year, wasn't it? Range of Wiganers came through growing up, and it was an annual pilgrimage, wasn't it, down to Wembley?
So it was sitting in a hospital bed in Cardiff Hospital, being 24 hours away from playing in a Challenge Cup final, to going into surgery, having my appendix out, missing the game. So
it's a good job that got picked up, because that can be really, really serious.
Yeah, and that was it. Like I said, just the fact, like I said, the day before, the Thursday, I was just being sick, and as I left, the wife had rolls in her hair and everything else, getting ready, telling me to shut up and hurry up because she was going to be late for her appointment. I'm thinking, well, what's my like I said, we got down to Cardiff. I went to Cardiff Hospital, and I had my appendix out. The lads went on to play the game the day after and beat Leeds, but sitting in a hospital bed watching it on a tiny little screen, when you know that you was 24 hours away from a Challenge Cup final, and watching your teammates winning. My uncle had flown over from New Zealand to watch the game. Obviously, all the family had gone down to Cardiff, and I was stuck in this hospital bed. By the Saturday afternoon or Saturday night, by this time I was feeling a little bit better, and I was still whiter than I normally am. People take the mickey, they say I go on moon beds, not sun beds. My dad got me out of the bed, chucked some clothes on me. He said, oh, to the nurses, oh, we'll just go for a walk. Took me down to the reception of the hospital, and my nan and granddad were there as a surprise, and my uncle, who'd come over from New Zealand, and I had a chat with them. And went back up to the room and he said, right, how are you feeling? I was like, yeah, I'm all right. I'm like, I've got that much morphine in me that I'm fine. Right, okay, no problem. Right, come on, we'll go for another walk. So we went out the hospital. He flagged a taxi down, got in a taxi. This is still with my cannula in my needle and my cannula in my hand and my hospital band on. As I said, whiter than I normally am. Taxi to the team hotel in the centre of Cardiff. Got my picture taken with the trophy. Met the rest of the lads, congratulated them. And then I just crashed after that and straight back in a taxi, straight to the hospital bed. Where have you been? Oh, we just went for a little walk around the hotel. It's like the day after, the week after. Picture of me with a cup in the hotel with the thingy, like the pointing at the thing in my hand. Missed out the Challenge Cup final and did this. And like I said, I missed the Challenge Cup final, but that's my story of the Challenge Cup now. It's not all the other stuff, that's what happened to me. And see, it's a good story. People like listening to it, but then you're thinking,
I've enjoyed
what's
it.
What's going on? But then, like, after Chairgar was the assistant at Hull that year, the day after they won the game, they were due to pick me up at the hospital to go on the team coach back up to Hull. Obviously, my mum and dad live in Wigan, so it would have been a bit of a trek to get me home. But a coach pulled up to pick me up, and it was the coach with all the wives and other players who hadn't played on it.
Right.
I thought that was for me. Like, no, we've not come to get you. And there was a bloke called Shep, Shep's like the club stalwart. He'd go and get all the staff lunches. He rides around on a little mobility scooter, and he'd just do little odd bits of jobs for the club. No, we've come to pick Shep up. He broke his ankle yesterday. So this bloke called Shep, who'd been like the club stalwart, he'd been in the hospital at the same time as me, they came to pick him up. So I'm thinking, well, who's going to pick me up? Anyway, the club, obviously the lads were quite intoxicated after winning. They'd just gone. They'd left me in Cardiff. So my dad had to take me. We got back to Hull just in time as they were going to do the open top bus parade. So I'm again full of morphine and every other painkiller going. And on the top of the bus, I held the trophy up and that. We got to the town hall. On the top bit of the town hall, the physio was absolutely blind drunk. Saw me. And he hadn't seen me for a couple of days, for at least 24 hours. Saw me, come running over, and I thought he was just going to grab me. Rugby tackled me. This is 40 hours post-appendicitis, having my appendix out. Tackled me. Thankfully, Richard Agar was stood behind me, caught me. Otherwise, I was over the edge of the town hall and probably in a heap on the floor after that. So he just had like little bits to add on, but again, it's part of my career. And obviously, I love my time at Hull. Like I said, Challenge Cup and a grand final and international honours. And then
you did the Great Divide. You crossed the Great Divide and went playing for Rovers. What was that like? How was you treated?
How was I treated? I wouldn't say like a king, but it was strange because everyone still liked me on both sides of the city. And usually, 6 months earlier, Paul Cook had done the same, and he was known as Judas.
Lambasted, wasn't he?
So he was Judas, but they all still loved me. I remember I'd signed for Hull KR, and Hull's like a goldfish bowl. If one person knows something that's true, everyone knows. Even if it's not true, everyone knows. And everyone knew that I'd signed for Hull KR, but it was the derby, Hull FC against Hull KR. I remember being on the pitch playing for Hull FC, and they read my name out on the team sheet. The full stadium cheered, even the away fans. I'm thinking, what do I do now? It weren't official that I'd signed, but I had signed at that point. And I had an absolute shocker. Probably one of my worst ever games that I'd played in, and I bet the Rovers fans were thinking, what have we done here? And the FC fans are probably thinking, we're glad to get rid of him. But it was more, as I said, about attitude and the relationship, the person I am. I think different people have got different perceptions of rugby players. I'd like to think I'm one of the nice guys. If there was a player appearance, I would turn up, even if it was a lot. You've got half an hour to get there, please Sean, can you do this? I'd be there, because I saw that as part of my job. It weren't just that 80 minutes on a field on a weekend or training. My job was to represent Hull FC, Hull KR, Wigan, whoever it was. I represented them as me, the best of my ability at all times. So I think a lot of the Hull FC fans saw that and thought, well, he's given everything that he has. And obviously it's difficult with being on radio, but the shape of my nose used to be an S. It was like the S of the Superman logo. Thankfully I've had it fixed, but the way I played the game, I think I gave everything that I did to every cause that I had. So I think the FC fans respected me for that. And when I moved across, I got a lot of well wishes, and rather than the Judas chants, and I think, you know, I won't say one of the chants, but it was something cookie,
something bleep. Yeah.
That's what I mean. And it's that offensive that I could, the only way I could say is cookie. Just so they knew it was aimed at. But like I said, they all still like me. I went on to have 4 great years at Hull KR as well, and I think I'm one of only 6 players who's played 100 games for Hull FC and Hull KR, which is,
it's a great record, that, isn't it? I mean, was you one really for looking at the records during when you're playing, or is it just sort of like now the boots are hung up? I can appreciate it now.
I'm a right nerd.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, really big.
See,
nerd.
You're a man after my own heart. See,
I could tell you my stats for like Wigan, Hull KR, Hull FC, but I couldn't tell you my Widnes ones because probably wrong to say, but I'm not interested. It's probably part of my career that I did what I did at the time, and I thought it was the right thing to do. In hindsight, I should have stayed at Hull KR, but you never know what's going to happen in life. And but as regards stats, I don't mind saying it. I'm a right nerd with stuff like that. I could tell you, and it's daft things that, like little things that I'm proud of. I think it's still one, but the record for the fastest hat trick from first try to last. I thought I still had it. I'm not 100% sure. For Hull FC against Salford in 2004, at the time it was, because Rod Studd told me, he said it was the fastest one, first try to last, not like first three in a game.
Yes,
first to last try.
So what was it? Was it something like 8 minutes or something like that?
No, I think it was less than that. I scored.
I've seen an 8 minute hat trick score. Yeah, that's why I mentioned
it. No, it's
that.
Less than that, I think. I scored. They kicked off. I think I scored the next set. Then it was half time. And then I think 2 sets in, I scored again. So right. I don't know whether it's, like I said, I don't know if anyone's beat it in Super League or anything like that. Like I said, the 100 appearances for both. The whole team's just actually playing for Wigan's.
I want to ask you about your international experiences as well. So your international experience, you mentioned first of all the England Day game. Was that the one that was played down at Brentford?
Yeah, I played 2. My first one at the end of 2002 was England against New Zealand, and I played, John Keir selected it, and I only played 10 Super League games at the time. Played 10 games, and John picked me in that. It was a tour squad. So we played New Zealand, and then the day after we flew out to Fiji and Tonga. So we played 2 test matches against Fiji, and then we went over to Tonga. So that was like my first. I went from July being a reserve team player or an academy player at Wigan to England Day International within 4 or 5 months, and it was like whirlwind for me to get my head round. But I went on to play there, and then the year after, I played in the England A again in the European Nations. The year after, I can't remember. The year after, we went over to Russia and played against Russia and France, which was fantastic to be part of. The downside was England were playing New Zealand, or Great Britain were playing New Zealand over here in a test series, and it was over in France. I had a great year in 2004, as I said. I'm not number one, but probably one of my best years. Got a phone call while I was over in France saying Chris Radlinski's unlikely to play in the Great Britain squad. If he pulls out, we'll fly you home and you'll be part of the Great Britain test squad. Obviously, as a 21-year-old, I'm chuffed to bits. Anyway, the day after Chris pulls out of the Great Britain squad, I'm thinking, well, what's happening?
Where's he playing?
Well, Kyle Harrison, the coach, came to me, and I don't know how to say this to you, but he's decided to call Kyle Pratt up instead. So Kyle Pratt was a winger, not a fullback. He was one of Brian's players at Bradford at the time, and it was just like, well, why? And he's like, I can't. And he couldn't give me a read. Kyle just kept apologising. And I was so frustrated at a player that hadn't been selected for the Great Britain squad, the England reserve squad, had been called, and Kyle stayed with the squad for 2 games, and then they released him from the squad before the last game, so he didn't even play any part in the series. And I'm not saying I would have played in the series, but to be part of that setup would have been fantastic and dreams. But then it kind of stopped for a few years then, and then 2008, the World Cup year, I had a decent year with Hull KR, and I was in the World Cup squad, or train-on squad at the end. And speaking with Tony Smith, he said you was there or thereabouts. And then Lee Smith had an absolute stormer in the grand final for Leeds against Saints, and he went with Lee Smith over me, which you can deal with if your coach sits you down. He says, look, he said, I was humming and ahhing, the player's just going to win a grand final for his team, so you all joined up and go, yeah, he's a better player, and fair enough. But then 2009, I was fortunate enough to get that England selection back, and I played against France for England in the June, and then I played in all four games of the Four Nations at the end of the year, which is walking out for your country in a final like that. Yes, we didn't win, and we were winning at 60 minutes, forget the last 20 minutes, but I don't think there's a bigger honour in the sport other than walking it for your national team and singing that national anthem with your teammates beside you.
Sean, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you sat by me. I've just got one more question to ask you before I let you go, and that is, if you could now give one piece of advice, thinking of all your experiences that you've had both on an international level and club level, to a young player coming through, what would it be?
Is it going to be one? I'd say as a statement, attitude is the most important thing that you can possess. Having a good attitude is the most important thing. And the other thing is, don't be afraid to ask questions. There's no stupid questions.
Keeping you up to date with everything Rugby League. This is the Final Hooter on Radio General.